Chapter 29. Interview with Marina Della Costa, contestant number 9, daughter of owner of half of Italy, Franco Della Costa.
Yes. We are taking a little trip this morning. Ted thought he would surprise me, but I am up at 4 already. Every day I do this now. I'm very excited, I have to admit, this experience. My papa thought it would be a good for me, for his princess to spread her wings, like a swan. I don't know if that's the correct saying, forgive me, but I did not want to go. I say, Papa, you cannot make me. Mars, are you insano? And he says, Per me, principessa, solo questa volta. Just this once, per papa, per favore, please. And I am making him buy me a yacht, a very big one. Maybe the biggest, I don't know. And I come on the show, and you know what? He was right. I am a newer woman, maybe woman for the first time. I am strong. I feel invincible. I don't need the yacht no longer. I can have it all. What? Who? Michael Horner. Yes, I know who he is. He seems, like a nice man. I barely know him. Why? What did you see? I have all the time in the world to obsess about last night, about Aurora and the photo, as Ted wakes me up at 4 a.m. along with the other remaining contestants and herds us onto 2 transports for a long and secret mystery ride to stage 2. I also have all the time in the world to deeply experience my first ever head-splitting hangover. In my stifling spacesuit, on a moving transport, over bumpy highways. Or at least they feel like bumpy highways to me. Every pebble and divot for miles and miles. The windows clouded so we can't see where we're headed. I have to ask Benji to get up so many times to run to the bathroom he finally just sighs. You take the aisle seat. Sorry, Benji. Oh, Aurora is such a bad influence. I could use some bad influence. Trust me, you don't want to be feeling the way I'm feeling right now. How'd she sneak booze into the compound? Are you really surprised Aurora found a way to sneak booze into the compound? Benji shrugs. Hey, want to hear a chicken joke? I shrug back. No. So there's a kid, and he says, Mommy, how do you know whether an egg will be eaten or hatch or become a chick? The mom smiles and pats his head. Honey, the farmer looks carefully and knows. He sends the ones we eat to the supermarket and saves the ones that hatch. The kid coughs and out pops a chick. The chick wipes itself off and shouts, Yeah, well, that idiot farmer needs a new pair of fucking glasses. I chuckle a little. It's the first positive feeling I've had all morning. Thanks, dude. Hey, by the way, we haven't talked since you were in medbay. Great job with the Claire thing in the stage 1 finale. Man, Blue Team was pissed. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that the teams will be throwing the rules out the window from now on. Good work. You're like a chaos agent. Thank you? It's half a compliment, so sure, you can say thank you. He reaches into his pocket and pulls out a phone. Take this, for example. I immediately scan around for cameras. Hey, zero access. We're not allowed to have phones. How the hell did you get your hands on a phone? See? You're a chaos agent. You started it. You have anyone you want to call? No. And as Benji ducks down in his seat and illicitly calls his friends, I wish I could tell him the truth. That I'd want to call my mother first and find out if she's watching the show and if she saw Aurora sneaking around my room and if it showed she left with anything. Then I'd want to call my sisters and tell them I love them dearly. And that as exciting as all this is, right now I miss the shit out of them and would rather be sitting around binge-watching shows we've seen 1,000 times or cooking breakfast with them. French toast with little pieces of eggshell left in on Dad's pieces so we could hear him crunch into it and roll his eyes. Then, of course, I'd want to call Dad and tell him all the things I'm not sure I've said enough. And Nana. Definitely Nana. I'd love to let her dote on me on the phone for a while.
Hey, look!
Benji's pointing out the front window on the horizon. The digital clouding on the windows slowly dissipates, revealing a barren desert dotted with red boulders and caves and nothing else. But there's a shape off in the distance, a man-made shape that interrupts the natural surroundings. A dome. We all crowd to the front of the transport, ooing and eyeing at the mammoth structure getting larger as we approach. Though I'm not sure why any of us should be surprised at its size, given Zach Larson's penchant for huge, oversized everything. As its details emerge, I notice that the dome is actually a container for several smaller domes. And it isn't tall like a skyscraper, but more like a big blister on the skin of the desert. In fact, if there are support beams, they're invisible at this distance. And the whole thing is crystal clear, so it has the impossibly delicate appearance of a soap bubble. It's maybe 100 yards in diameter, with about 10 subdomes in a circle inside. In the direct center, a slightly taller subdome contains what looked like a forest or fruit trees. Claire claps.
We're going to simulate living on Mars. I get the bottom bunk, Mike.
Claire, dear, I'm sorry. Once again, you're almost correct, but not quite. It's the disembodied voice of Zach Larson, who hasn't joined us on our little junket into the desert. It's just us contestants, no team leaders either. We all peer around for cameras, though I don't know why they could be anywhere.
You see, you won't be simulating living on Mars. You'll be simulating...
Everyone knows some twist is coming. It's so Larson. But his perfect timing is a little off, because seconds turn into minutes, and the suspense grates on our tired nerves. Lucy from Orange Team shouts out,
"Simulating what, Larson?"
And then softer, "Showboater?" I heard that, Lucy. Larson chuckles.
"Sorry for the delay. Okay, here we go. Take two. You see, contestants, you won't be simulating living on Mars."
The transport turns from its straight-on approach, veering to the dome's left side, changing our perspective, revealing something new.
"You'll be simulating building on Mars."
Directly behind the first dome is a second, a miniature version, hidden from our approach until now. But this dome has no structures inside, just pallets of panels, tubes, tanks, plants in sealed containers, and I imagine about 50 million screws.
"Welcome to stage two. Erection."
Every one of us lets out a groan, as I'm sure every person watching around the world does, and Zach's voice even giggles knowingly. Quinn shakes his head.
"He's a child."
"Thank you, Quinn. I'll take that as a compliment. Now, let's get to it, shall we? Fun, fun, fun. All right, the rule. Again, just one. Erect the MDV, or Mars Domed Village, using the adjacent finished example and full instructions included as a guide. Teams will receive points for each module. Red and yellow teams working on air, water, food. Orange team on mining, and green team on terraforming. This is a half-size replica of the village one lucky winner will be helping to build on Mars, and this one is simplified for non-experts. You have 3 weeks to get all systems operational and complete the task. Now, if you would, exit the transport, fasten your helmet securely, confirm your breathing apparatus is active, and step into the smaller dome.
Did he say breathing apparatus? No answer from Larson. Slowly, our contingent of 15 remaining contestants steps off the two transports, scanning around like ducklings without their mother, clipping on our helmets. Marina calls out to the open air, her radio signal audible inside all our helmets.
"Zach, darling, when will Ted and the team leaders be joining us?"
I think I hear a laugh somewhere far away. And moments later, the transports silently reverse course and leave. Albert points to the smaller dome.
"They're inside already.
waiting for us.
Like sheep, we follow Albert to his shape vaguely like a doorway. It's a digital display, and above it, words flash in blue light. Please proceed through the membrane. Claire elbows me. Proceed through the membrane? Sounds kinky. Confidently striding into the dome, Albert is swallowed whole by what looks like clear jelly, as we watch in awe. He turns and motions the rest of us to follow. I step forward. It's funny how much your body can tell you not to do something. I'm literally pushing my body forward against its will, while it tells me not to walk into what looks like a wall. The substance is maybe a couple of inches thick, and on the way through, something like electricity tickles everywhere the wall touches my spacesuit. My body instinctively steps backward, away from the perceived danger, and I feel a strong resistance. Immovable. I can't retreat a millimeter. Somehow Larson has created a gigantic self-healing one-way membrane. Incredible. But if this is the way in, where's the way out? I step inside, shaking off the strange electric feeling, surveying the interior of this technological wonder. And yet again, have to hand it to Larson. This looks exactly like the Martian landscape, rocky and red. I shuffle over to one of the pallets of materials, running a gloved finger through a quarter inch of red dust. He definitely sweats the details. Once we're all inside, Tanner looks left, right.
Hey, where's Albert?
Albert peeks out from behind another pallet, palms up. Hey, Albert, you said Ted and the team leaders were inside.
I assumed they were in here. I thought I saw something moving among the pallets.
You're an idiot.
It was a safe assumption.
Obviously not safe enough. Now what?
We wait. Claire, what do you think you're doing?
Getting out of this stupid suit. Her hands reach up to unclasp her helmet locks. As she disengages them, a little whoosh sound comes from inside, and her eyes widen in horror, and she falls to the ground, gasping for breath, clutching her throat.
Claire!
Mike and Susie Q jump on her flailing body, fighting to reseal the helmet. Ultimately, Mike has to pin her arms down while Susie Q re-engages the lock. Claire draws in air desperately for a few seconds and finally settles down.
Jesus Christ! Larson's trying to kill us.
Albert flaps his arms to calm us, I guess, though it looks more like he's trying to take flight, and he addresses the group.
People, number one, it's obviously a vacuum in here. Don't be stupid.
No offense, Claire. Number two, Larson's not trying to kill us. And number three, we wait for our team leaders, period. How long?
Until they get here.
I glance down at my spacesuit's armband readout and have a flash of certainty. Ted and his camera crews aren't coming. Our team leaders aren't coming. Larson isn't coming. No one is coming. We're alone, and we have an hour of oxygen left.